Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you like this podcast, why not get a tattoo of it? Or rate, review and subscribe. Either one, your choice. But we'd really like the tattoo.
Hello and welcome to the summer holidays edition of the School for Dumb Women. The classrooms are empty, there's some teachers in that don't want to be around their families, and a dog has set up camp in the sports hall. But we're here to teach you about all the things you're too proud to admit you know nothing about. I'm your host woman, shipped off to an activity club that had two skipping ropes and half a Jenga set between 40 children, Hannah Varrell. With me is Camp America survivor, Alexandra Haddo.
I think I was actually on Shipwrecked by mistake, Hannah.
And staying at her nan's all summer, Caroline O'Donoghue.
She never turns the central heating off, so it's like being on a tropical island.
This week we're learning where dance music comes from, why we haven't cancelled Switzerland yet, even though nothing ever happens there, and we've invited comedian and writer Viv Groskop to the school to tell us all about how a talk show host came to be worth literally billions of dollars and inspired her Edinburgh show. Let's begin.
So Caroline, you're here to tell us about a type of music that's named after what you do when you listen to all music.
Yes, today I'm here to talk about dance music.
Dance? How very 90s. The Fat Boy Slim is here.
Kevin and Perry have gone large. All I want to do is do it. All I want to do is do it.
So
good. The first dance song that I actually knew was the fake dance song from Kevin and Perry Go Large. How pathetic is that?
And that's a fake song. I thought that was real.
I mean, I guess it's... What's
it's as real as
definition?
Any other.
Yeah, I remember my first thing realising that dance music was a fairly new phenomenon was my granddad going... Oh, you get all these songs these days. Oh, I don't like them. Yeah, they're like, I love you, baby. I love you, baby. I love you, baby. And I was like, what's he on about? And I realised he was on about, I love you, baby. I love you, baby.
By the way, that's a new character for you that you just debuted. And
I
loved him.
We haven't had Granddad before.
Yeah. Oh,
we've had a lot of Dad, but...
Let's not get into him.
Oh,
I won't badmouth him on air.
He can get into me if he wants. With a voice like that, Jesus.
Well, the rigor mortis is set in. That'll be quite the ride for you.
Already the comedy is being very 90s. Like we're gone back in time. This is great. But anyway, I'm interested in dance music this week because at the weekend, I went to my first ever rave.
Ooh.
I know.
White lady at a rave.
I know. Check me out. I'm really experiencing life's rich tapestry.
You are.
I'd like to say as well, you're in the studio today with a lovely knitted jumper on. And
I know, yeah.
Tortoiseshell glasses. And
a sensible bun tied the nape of my neck.
Bun.
Yes.
No, so I went to Wilderness Festival.
Also, it looks idyllic there.
It was really, really lovely. It was a weird one because it's one of those new festivals where in the daytime it's all like yoga classes and like poetry at the wheel.
Yeah, and like swimming in the lake and
you can't
stuff.
Do that on
yeah,
a
it's
down.
All that during the day. It's all wellness and all that stuff. And then at night it turns into a Hieronymus Bosch painting.
Yeah,
it's
just people go mad, don't they?
They go absolutely mad. So there's this walled off area where like it's only over 18s and you just go behind this like this big barrier and you're in this woods and there's dance music playing really loudly and there's DJs and like all this like colour and smoke and dry ice is going all over the trees and all the like patterns of the leaves are on your skin and it just feels like you're in a really fucking trippy Midsummer Night Dream.
Yeah.
It's class.
So that's not the drugs, that's just...
No. It was a sober time. I had my bottle.
The coloured... dust. Yeah. That's what did it.
I had my bottle of water and my clean living t-shirt.
Lovely.
No, but I had a really, really brilliant time. And what surprised me the most is generally I hate dance music because I hate music that doesn't have words in it. Like, to me, same. Like, I'm not really a very good dancer. So to me, like, a good song on a night out is just a song with words that I know.
Yeah, that you can sing along to and sort of jig a bit.
Jiggle around. Yeah. Jiggle my big white lady flesh sack around the place while, like, mouthing the words. That's my idea of a good time. Yeah. So I was, like, just lost myself in, like, hours and hours and hours of dance music. And I had the greatest time. And then afterwards, I was like, all my life I've been hearing about, like, all these dance music and all these different kinds.
Oh, I still don't understand what house music is.
House music, deep techno, deep house,
minimal
new
techno,
wave, electro, whatever the hell it is that Kraftwerk does.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know that scene in Forrest Gump where Bubba is naming all the different things you can do with shrimp?
Oh, yeah.
That's what dance music is. It's like house, acid house, trance, acid trance.
Minimal techno.
Yeah. And so, like, I thought maybe I should just have a little research and see what it all came from, what it all is.
Did it come from Norman Cook, a.k.a. the Fatboy Slim?
It did not, you know. And this is going to be the sort of, like, crux of my entire lesson about dance music, really. So dance music came from disco music.
Oh, okay.
So, like, in the 70s, that was obviously the big thing. And, you know, they were getting more, like, synthesized beats that were coming in. And the first, like, big song that could be defined as, like, a dance music song was I Feel Love by Donna Summer.
I was going to say I Feel Love because it has that really...
Yeah, that is the first, like, official dance song.
And it has a large section of the song which doesn't have any lyrics, and it is just like da na na na.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first, like, 30 seconds of the song are just that. Yeah. And there's
I'm getting goosebumps. I want to dance.
Yeah. It's good dancing after this. Good. I mean, we are around the corner from GAY. We could just go and hear that song, like, right now.
Yeah.
So we had this sort of disco tradition, but, like, loads of people really, really hated disco music, and they also hated the kind of, like, R&B tradition, which was really, like, it was really hierarchical.
Yeah.
So, like, there was, like, all these underground clubs where, like, it was impossible to sort of, like, penetrate to that level of, like, making this music because, like, it was all controlled by these record labels and stuff. And there was, you know, typically with all kind of black music, there was just, like, loads and loads of white people who had colonized the very top of it, who were just sort of plucking their favorites and then, you know, putting them up to the kind of echelons of success. And everybody else was like, we made this music and you've taken it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a... as you'll see, a common trend when it comes to black people making any kind of art. So what was also happening with all of this is that people only had a certain amount of, DJs only had a certain amount of disco records to go around. And because there was so much of it, their collection could get outdated really quickly. So what they started doing was, like, mixing in new beats to make it sound like new music because they couldn't afford to buy new music, which also makes a lot of sense. So yeah, then the kind of tradition for, like, speeding it up came. So, you know, if we think about, like, a Motown beat, like a drum beat, it's very much that... I've been feeling happy. Yeah, it's very much that underneath it.
Yeah.
And so with the creation of house music, it was kind of keeping that sort of deep, bassy sort of sound with the kind of the kick drum and the hi-hat, but just speeding it up a lot. Kind of thing.
Okay.
And that sort of started in Chicago in the 1980s.
Ooh.
That sort of all erupted there again because people were just kind of getting sick of disco music. They were kind of sick of hearing of just, like, endless sort of love songs from Motown.
Yeah.
And they were just sort of making their own music in their bedrooms, buying all these synthesizers because they were kind of getting cheap to buy and own and making this stuff. And it was just really, really DIY. And the same thing happened with techno music in Detroit.
Detroit was the home of Motown, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I don't know an enormous amount about Motown, but which I would actually love somebody to do a subject on that in a future episode. But they were kind of, I mean, techno as opposed to house sounds a lot more like aliens have invaded your brain.
It's very much like
one of the founders, like, described his first time ever listening to that kind of music as, like, I felt like a UFO had landed on my head.
Yeah.
Is that like Cyberdog? If you go to Cyberdog in London.
Yes, which is very, like, Cyberdog.
Huge shop that's all kind of like, neon and
spaceships, aliens.
And so, like, and people like Kraftwerk were doing it in Germany, but it was really, like, this Detroit scene that were taking sort of European electronic influences and fusing them with like African beats and sort of every and jazz beats and all that kind of stuff and just forming these new genres of music. But what's really interesting is that like all this music was forming in these predominantly black urban city centers like Chicago, like Detroit. It was all sort of bursting out of these areas.
Mm.
And it makes sense because like if you think about it, rock and roll is a suburban thing, right?
Yeah.
To make rock and roll, you have to have a front room and a drum kit and like a friend who has a guitar and a has a bass guitar. But to like you can't do that if you live in an urban center. You have like a machine that you can have in your bedroom that can maybe cost you $150 and then you're fine, you're laughing.
You're away, yeah.
You and your friends can just
because you don't
bond
have, like,
over that.
Mom and dad's garage.
Totally. And the I live in South London and like every other weekend when I walk down Deptford High Street, I see some 18-year-old who's filming his music video with his friends for his grime song that he made in his bedroom. And it's so cool to see that sort of like DIY culture coming together. But the weird thing is that like this stuff was starting in these huge American, predominantly black cities, but then it was finding its home in UK and Europe.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because like it's like it grows here and it's just like taken across the sea. It's a bit like so early colonization, like taking like tea and spices, but like it's all this dance music.
Yeah. Was it not big in the US then? Did they not really listen to their own dance music?
The thing is, it never became mainstream the way it became mainstream here.
Oh.
The way like dance became huge here in like the 80s and 90s. But there it kind of remained quite underground.
Okay.
And I think, I mean, obviously, this is like an hour or two's worth of my research, and I don't. I'm sure I could probably see loads in the subject, but it's quite hard when you're new to a subject to find where the good place is to find all the good stuff.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
But I kind of have a theory, and I'd like to share it.
Yeah,
and I'd actually really love if people are listening and they're into the history of dance music to come and find me and talk to me about this because I'd really love to learn more. But I think what it is that like because to listen to dance music, you're best off being on drugs.
Yes, yeah.
You're best positioned to enjoy dance music if you are on drugs. The law around taking drugs and having and drug culture in general in America in the 80s and 90s, particularly circa Clinton, were so... We've all seen that Ava DuVernay documentary, The 13th, I think it's called.
No.
But it's about the number of incarcerated black men in America.
Oh, right.
And which is huge, obviously. But I think it's like... Because the drug laws were so severe in America... Having this subculture that could go mainstream that is kind of based around recreational drug taking, like almost creating that scene, you're almost creating a place for you to get busted and go to prison.
Right.
Right. Oh. So I think it had to stay super underground. But over here, people like in the 80s and 90s were quite frank about drug taking by comparison. Like nobody is going to get like put in prison for having a couple of E on them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just not. So I think that might have been what it is. I think it just sort of like found its like real home in Europe, but like was taken from like these really urban city centers in America.
I love the way you analyze stuff. It's so interesting and it makes total sense.
It does make, I mean, I have completely invented this theory, but.
No, but I mean, it works out.
Yeah.
It does kind of shake out, right?
Yeah.
Also, there are obviously loads of different genres of dance music, but I'm stuck for time here. But one thing I did learn is like, do you know trance music?
Yeah.
So it's very much like a very slow down dance music. And it's got a lot of like female vocals. It's quite euphoric. Like it starts very slow and it'll kind of ascend something over time. It kind of sounds very like disembodied voices.
Yeah.
That also kind of started in America by Americans, but found its true home in Goa.
Really?
As in India.
What?
I know. So Goa is like the biggest trance town in the world.
Wow.
Which is so funny when you think because like Indian culture, obviously meditation, yoga.
Especially like Goa, because that's, I've been to Goa and it's very hippie and very chilled.
Yeah. So they've like created their own sort of trance scene. There was like this American guy who as a student sort of like went to India and started playing a lot of trance and just sort of like mushroomed from there because it just really like was very simpatico with their existing culture.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
That is incredible.
I know. And I don't think I'll listen to dance music that much, but I really respect it in a way that I never had before now.
Because
I've always associated it with like sort of like middle class white kids in their bedrooms. And even when I was at this festival and there was all these DJs coming up and they were all like people like Groove Armada and people like that.
I love them.
It was like, these are all like white men in their 40s.
Yeah.
It's like you don't really see on big festival billings or whatever, like the black people who made this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm sure you do in the States, but not here.
Well, yeah, story of everything, really, isn't it?
Yeah, of literally everything.
Yeah.
Like,
what's your favorite dance song?
I don't know. What are they?
Well, my favorite is Sandstorm, which is just da 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 da. And then eventually.
Oh, that is a good one.
Oh, my Sash.
That's such a good one. See, I never knew what they're called.
I'm just like, you don't listen to them like on their own.
Yeah, you're never going to be like, oh, we get that track up on Spotify.
Yeah.
By its name.
But what's that one that's always? Is this a dance song? It's always on in the club, when you're paying in. Outside, and you can hear the door swinging open, yes. and it's always this one.
And it's always like a muffled half, like that she's singing, and then he goes, and then you go in, and it's like.
One Direction or something. You're like, where is this coming from?
This is the greatest truth of our...
I know!
Fucking...
How can I work this into a set?
Please work that into a set, because people deserve to know the truth.
I know. It's a conspiracy by clubs. That lady on that
and
song.
Because it always sounds like that the club is really full. And then you go in and it's like two people in the middle of
exactly.
And, oh, God.
You got to show me love.
This week on the Women Who Code Mixer, we're learning about something which gets liquid all over your legs and will make your bits sore if you do it for too long.
What does last night have to do with coding, Hannah?
So, in the Women Who Code Mixer, we take an aspect of coding or tech and make a loose attempt at explaining what it is before putting on our Sounds of the Sea playlist and curling up in a ball. This week, bike sharing systems.
Oh, is that like in Amsterdam where they have those racks and you can lock them up together?
Is it like Boris bikes?
Yeah, you don't really lock them. Yeah, Boris bikes, exactly. Which are actually called Santander bikes.
I know.
It's weird that we call them Boris bikes.
Also, apparently it was Ken Livingstone that kind of like set the wheels in motion for the bikes to, you know, come to London. So,
But you're not going to say living bikes. That just sounds like you're riding people.
Livingston bikes. Yeah, apparently there's like well over a million bikes in the world that are just bike sharing bikes. That's kind of a lot, isn't
that's
it?
Really
there's
cool.
7 billion people, so maybe that's not that many.
I saw the equivalent of Boris bikes in Paris, which I can only assume are called like Le mode de bicyclette. years ago, and I was like, this is such a fucking great idea. Like, where
do we
have it?
Every city has them.
It's amazing.
Yeah, they're absolutely everywhere. And most of the world's sharing bikes are in China, apparently, like 3/4 of them, if not more.
Oh, wow.
And these sharing bikes are part of what's called the sharing economy, which is obviously like being massively advanced by tech. So that's why it's the Women Who Code Mixer.
Oh, my God. So great.
There are 4 generations of these bikes. They actually kind of started ages ago. Obviously, like, the very kind of base level is, like, you go to a bike shop where they rent bikes and you say, could I have a bike, please? And you take the bike out and then you return it that evening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of just zero generation. First generation is a kind of scheme where they would just put bikes in a city and people could just use them for free. And obviously people just abused that hugely, because why would you not? Unless you're me, I'm a very moral person.
Yeah, you do see those bikes around the place every now and then being like, take me and leave me somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm a hipster's experiment.
Cool.
This is part of a master's program.
Yeah.
The second generation of bikes were bikes that could be hired with a coin, like shopping trolleys. You put the coin in, take the bike. Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Third generation, Boris bikes, stuff like that, that can be rented from docking stations, but then you have to return them to the docking station as well, which is a pain in the bum. And you need to use like a membership card or a debit card or whatever to kind of get out. Mm-hmm. And on the fourth generation, which is like what's been happening certainly in London and I think a lot of other capital cities or big cities lately, is dockless bikes. So you pick it up from literally anywhere and put it back anywhere and it kind of locks itself up with a code.
Oh, yes. So is this what I've been seeing?
Yes. I think probably those ones. Right, and they're like orange or something. There's like Ofo and there's Mobike.
So what happens when you nick one?
I don't know.
You just take it home and put it in your house?
Well, you can't use it
unless
you've unlocked it.
See.
Because it will like lock itself. Yeah.
Clever.
So yes, that was a very brief history of bike sharing apps and technology. So I thought, because it's the Women Who Code Mixer, we like to make it more applicable to ourselves as women.
Yeah, I'm not being related to, therefore I'm not listening.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's other stuff we can share in this way. Basically, I think we could have a sharing system for jumpers.
Yes, I could have done one.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, I'm quite bad at knowing when I'm going to need a jumper, when I'm not going to need a jumper. Often I'm too hot or too cold, most commonly too cold.
Not even a jumper, but like a denim jacket.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because denim jackets go with everything.
Yeah.
And they're like not too hot, not too cold.
Exactly. And I don't want to be carrying one all the time either.
Yeah. Yeah. But the beauty of a denim jacket as well is that like it doesn't matter what size it is.
That's the
it
thing.
It fits everyone.
If it's small, it looks sort of like cute and pixie-ish. If it's large, it's like, ooh, boyfriend jacket.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll always look at least okay.
On a similar vein, I thought as well, nice shoes for when you're sort of like, you know, you're in the pub with a friend and then they're like, let's go to this place around the corner. They have really nice cocktails. And you're in your like 5-year-old trainers.
Yeah.
If there was a nice shoes sharing system.
I was going to say tights because today... it's been like the hottest summer ever, and then today it was really cold and rainy, but I sort of got dressed in a sort of half daze and I looked like a hooker. So if I could have just like got a pair of tights and popped them on, I would have looked normal and appropriate for the weather.
I guess the thing with shoes and tights is that they're kind of intimate and people have like smelly foofs or smelly feet. So
smelly foofs.
What else do you reckon we could share in this way?
Oh, what a great question.
Knits.
Ooh.
Knits, yeah.
Put your head in the knit machine.
Look your knits up when you're done with them.
Yeah. Ooh, codependent friends.
Oh, yeah,
definitely.
Because
everyone likes a codependent friend when you're like, oh, I've got no plans for tonight. And then there's that friend who's like, come over to mine. We'll watch Love Island. And you're like, great, I love you. But then there's like, you've got a lot of our stuff on. Codependent friends kind of like...
Are we watching Love Island again?
Are we watching Love Island again? Exactly. But somebody else, there's going to be somebody else out there who'd love to watch Love Island.
I love that idea. Yeah. Another suggestion I had written down actually was kind of similar to that. Friendly strangers. You know when someone starts talking to you in the street? It doesn't happen that often. But like occasionally someone will start talking to you on the tube or like the train or whatever. And you can tell they're just a nice person who just wants someone to talk to. And it's like, I don't want to talk to you. But someone else might. So, you know... It would be good if I could kind of just go on an app and be like, does anyone want to, like, just, can I pawn this person off on anyone?
Yeah. The thing is, I as a dog owner, I have tried the Borrow My Doggy app, which is kind of like a dog sharing app, essentially. And I joined it. It was like, for a dog owner, it's like £35 a year, which is a bit stiff to give away your dog for a bit. Of all these people who apparently, and you get all these messages from people who are like, oh my god, I love dogs, I miss my dog from home so much, can I come over and take your dog? And you're like, yes, I here are the times where it would be good for you to take my dog and I will be home and you can take her. And they're like, no.
Oh really?
Yeah, no, you
on a
cannot
Saturday
rely
morning
on these
when it's sunny.
No, exactly. They want a dog basically when I want my dog, which is Saturday morning when it's sunny, and I want to reap the rewards of putting all this fucking care into her.
Yeah. Fair play. Agreed. Yeah.
So maybe that would be the same thing with codependent friend app, where people would always be like hoarding her on like Friday nights when you've got nothing on.
Yeah.
And then
her
demand would be through the roof. But she can charge, I suppose. So.
What about like engagement rings if you don't want to get chatted up in a bar?
Oh, very good one.
Just pop that
on. Or just even a wedding ring.
In the gumball machine. Pop it on, put it back.
Yeah, that's not bad, yeah.
And it comes with like a little story like, Chris proposed to you on a cliff in France.
very nice.
2016.
Or like burner phones, so that you can
get a
vending machine and then you can give someone your number and like... put their number into yours and be like, and they do that thing where they call you to make sure and it would ring.
That is great. Genius. And also then you could pretend you were on the wire as well.
Yeah.
All right, well that's where the fifth generation of bike sharing is going to go, burner phones.
Great, perfect.
Yeah. Alex, you never take a side in an argument. It's really annoying, but your chocolate is divine. What is your fucking deal?
Well, Caroline, I'm Swiss.
Oh, that makes sense.
Also like the cheese.
Yes. I decided to do Switzerland because this week I was researching. I'm working for a magazine and we're having to photograph a they're building one watch museum in the rural Switzerland.
Oh,
that's
lovely.
Probably costing more than God earns a year. And and like I had to
find to give him some advice.
And I had to like find a Swiss photographer nearby that was good enough to do this very specific task. And then I was thinking about Switzerland, and then I remembered a few years ago I met my friend Max in a bar, and he was honestly ranting about how much he hated Switzerland for half an hour.
People super hate Switzerland.
They
yeah.
really do. Yeah. Like, it's a massive. He went on a massive polemic. Like, I think that's the right word, isn't it? About how they're just they don't do anything and they're allowed to get away with it and stuff. And then so I sort of looked into it, and Switzerland is a very strange, unique country. I mean, what's the first thing you think about when you think Switzerland?
It's neutral.
Yeah, it's
neutrality,
neutral.
And also Swiss bank accounts for some reason.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't really know why.
Good, because they're the, that and chocolates are the top things.
Yeah, like, I guess watches, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah. there's a lot of expensive mountains. Watches, mountains, everything's very expensive. They don't have the euro, they have the Swiss franc.
Oh. Well, to be honest, when you think of like how small a country it is, there's actually quite a lot of things to associate with it. Like I don't associate anything with Yugoslavia.
Yeah, so. War.
War, yeah.
Eurovision. But yeah, but it's quite strange, don't you think, that a country is just allowed to say, oh, any wars, we won't be in them.
Is that still what they do, or was that just for the World Wars?
No, that's, they are completely... Well, yes, mainly for that, but it was established in 1815.
Oh, shit. So oh, it was really, really old. I kind of always thought it was just the First World War. They were like, this looks destructive. We're not going to get involved.
No, it was in 1815 after the Napoleonic Wars that it declared itself neutral. And it's
forever,
quite, yeah,
in perpetuity.
But it's just quite strange because like why don't we either all do that and then it wouldn't work because that would be all on the same playing field again, or like how are they just allowed to do it and why does nobody invade them?
Why
does
no one attack Switzerland? Yeah, because
all their money is there.
Because all their money is there. Yeah, yeah. But like Switzerland also is very heavily armed. It's got the Swiss Guard, which are like really highly trained soldiers.
Wow.
So they can defend. Oh, because I guess they don't put any money into. Having an attacking army.
Yeah, they
that,
don't.
Is that a thing?
So how... It's just quite strange, but lovely that they're very peaceful.
Are they peaceful or are they just selfish?
Or maybe they're, maybe they're waiting to pounce.
Oh. Mm.
But yeah, everything is very expensive in Switzerland and like there's no coast or anything, so everything has to be... Well, not everything. A lot of things have to be imported. And also they just kind of... do everything in quite a posh way.
They're very, very posh. I've never met a Swiss person who wasn't posh as hell.
I don't think like the Swiss have things like pot noodles or McDonald's.
I bet they don't have a Carrefour. Like when you go to France, you're like, fantastic, like Carrefour.
Yeah.
I'll get, you know, five cheeses for half a euro for 50
like,
cents.
Yeah. Like, who works the working class jobs in Switzerland?
That's the thing. I don't think there's many poor people.
I worked as an au pair for like 5 weeks when I was at uni, and it was in France, but like on the kind of border of Geneva and Switzerland. And both of the parents worked in Switzerland, but lived in France because it was cheaper that way.
Yeah. So, and you said, oh, because all their money is there. The other thing you associate with the Swiss is secrecy and banking and lots of things that we don't really understand with loopholes and stuff like that. A very famous scene in Wolf of Wall Street where he smuggles all of his money to Switzerland. By law in Switzerland, any bank can, well, does withhold. It will never give out the information of who holds an account to the government.
How is that allowed?
It's just the law. So you've basically got absolute privacy. So I could be like, yep, my name's Alexandra Haddo. I'm 30. This is my address. These are all my bank details. I'm going to deposit £1 million of, like, laundered money into this
and
account.
And you never have to say where this money's come from.
And you never have to say
here's the money.
Yep.
Take it.
Yep.
And then they just ingest that money.
Yeah, and they never have to
buy another
say
fountain.
Anything to the...
That's so crazy.
So kind of like once you get there, you're safe, but I guess it's like...
Getting the money there.
Getting there, getting
what,
the money there, yeah.
Literally cash?
Well, no, but just sort of setting it up and stuff like that, I think they could probably say like, oh, I saw you were trying to set up a bank account, you know,
yeah,
and it's like
yeah.
once you've got it, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just, in a lot of cases, I think it is smuggling in physical cash if you've laundered it.
So you can't like set up a Swiss bank account like online?
I think you could, but not one of these dodgy ones. You could set up like a normal one, like a NatWest equivalent.
Yeah, you probably have to be like a millionaire to even like go into one of these banks and have a meeting with the bank manager there or whatever.
Mm.
So weird.
And it is weird. And India have a rule where you can't take a certain amount of money out of the country. You have to kind of
lots
spend
of countries
it,
have those kind of rules for a long time.
To keep the economy going. So just black money, which is what the Indians call, you know, money that's made on the black market, illegally, all of this, manages to make it to Switzerland and just, you know, be there and never seen again. So it was estimated that in 2010, in the just black money in the Swiss bank accounts was $2.1 billion.
Wow.
Just of one country's
just
currency.
Just of one country's illegal currency that they know of.
Oh my goodness.
That they know of.
So I guess that's why everything's so expensive as well, because as we learned in episode one, you know, if you're sitting, if the value of the country is sort of, if they're absolutely bursting at the seams with money, like, everybody's rich, kind of.
Yeah, because they're like, well, you know, not everyone's going to want to take all of it out at once.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just invest it in a, you know, in our lovely chocolate museum.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, they just, it's a very sort of strange, rich, no problem.
It's so weird the way that like countries can just do things like that and just be like, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Like, where is the regulation here?
I know.
Yeah, I know. It's just very strange.
I really want in a future episode for us to do the UN, because like, it's so weird how so many countries do bonkers things under the proviso of it's a thing. Like Saudi Arabia, yeah, women, we don't like them, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, all right, I guess I'll respect that. Ireland, we didn't have abortions for years and years and years, and it was illegal to be gay until the 90s. It's a thing. Like,
yeah, that's fine, it's fine. What? Look, it's just what we do. So, yeah. And 8 of the top 10 most expensive schools in the world are in Switzerland.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very much like international billionaires will send their kids to secondary school in Switzerland to get, like, to be around their people, right?
Yes, yeah. And it's, yeah, my friend of a friend had a job in the most expensive school, which is called La Rosie. And basically, he said it was insane. Like, kids get dropped off by private jet, like helicopters. It's just, the amount of money is unreal. But it's almost like a little safe haven for rich people, isn't it? Because like the super rich send their kids there to be safe for 7 years. They send their money there to be safe. Like, it's neutral. There's never going to be a war. It's nice, but also quite strange that that's allowed to be. And you worry like how much corruption there is, because they sort of feel untouchable.
Yeah, right? Completely, yeah.
You completely worry, like, I do have a few sort of extended family members who went to like Zurich to work for a few years, make a lot of money, and they'll come back. But like, if you bring your family over there, being like, how am I going to raise a kid normally?
Yes, exactly.
It's a mad place.
It's almost like everyone's a Malfoy, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone is Malfoy.
I'm sure in Switzerland as well, the kids have to do national service. At least I think the boys have to. So they train to be in the army when they're like, I don't know, 17 or something probably.
Well, I think the army's one of the, it's kind of drilled into the culture, because it, weirdly, it's kind of like, if anything does kick off, we need to sort of portray that we have got these absolute badass hard nuts that everybody's
hard nuts.
You know, because if one day, you know, I mean, God knows, you know, the state of the world is like at the moment, someone's like, hang on a minute, why we let Switzerland get away with all this? Let's invade them or something.
Yeah,
like, they're fucked. Well, maybe they're not, because they've got the Swiss Guard, but yeah, they all just seem very intriguing and secretive.
I do know a girl who is English, but she grew up in Switzerland, and she was kind of talking about it one night. She was like, oh, you know, Switzerland is really, really lovely, there's no crime there, I feel so safe. And I kind of felt like, that's great, like, you kind of wanted to shake her and be like, well, there's no crime because there's no poverty, because you've eliminated
it. Yes, because you've eliminated it.
Yeah,
so where have those people gone, you know?
Yeah, where have you vanished them to?
Like,
just living in the mountains, eating their own teeth.
Yes, like, they're not eating Greggs. I bet they'd have Greggs.
I bet they don't have Greggs. I wonder what fast food it is. And I bet they have McDonald's, but like weird McDonald's.
But I bet it's like gold plated and there's no like yellow or red signs. It's all just sort of, it blends in with the architecture, and it's got like a little snow capped M.
Snow capped M! I bet it does.
So yeah, essentially Switzerland, shady, bad, but also lint, good.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In conclusion. So we'll let them off, I reckon.
I love how it's like surrounded by snow-capped mountains. So it's like, oh, skiing. It's like, it's just surrounded by the trappings of rich people.
Yeah. It's like, it has to be full of rich people because the only holiday you can do is skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine.
Ugh. I'm not for Switzerland, I don't think.
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure I am.
Switzerland,
yeah
or no?
I have been there and it's it was nice. I had a nice time.
Oh.
So, yay when I'm on holiday. But nay. Let's go nay.
But in general, stop enabling financial corruption, Switzerland.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hannah, once again, you have left the school this week to fraternise with a stranger.
Yes, I'm beginning to see the benefits in seeking knowledge elsewhere, my friends.
No!
I know, because it's summer, I had some time on my hands. So I went on a long voyage of self-discovery to find someone who really knows a hell of a lot about Oprah to explain what she is all about. I feel like, Carolyn, you're probably an Oprah fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of her in theory. I don't really watch her show, but I like the idea of her, and I think I know a little bit about her.
I just love that joke that it's like, you get a car, you get a car, you yeah. get a car.
What I really like about Oprah is that, like, Oprah got, like, millions of people to read, like, Toni Morrison and William Faulkner and stuff. Like, her Oprah Book yeah. of the Month Club changed the way America read for a good 20 years.
Really? Yeah.
And that alone is like, you fucking killing it, Oprah.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's actually loads of stuff that Oprah has done that, like, I didn't really know about. So, yeah, it was really good to go and meet Viv Groskop to hear all about it. And here I am talking to her.
I'm at the Museum of Comedy with none other than writer, podcaster and comedian Viv Groskop.
Yay! Hi, it is me. Hello, Hannah. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm thrilled to be here talking to you.
Thrilled to have you. So Viv, you're a lifelong Oprah fan, I've heard. And in fact, I'm speaking to you before one of the previews for your Edinburgh show, which is all about Oprah. So because you're an Oprah expert, today you've kindly agreed to teach the School for Dumb Women all about her.
I'm so thrilled to be able to spread the gospel of the great Oprah in preparation for the coming age of her presidency, which I believe is an inevitability.
Oh, really? Okay. But for now, just in case anyone isn't sure, we like to start off on a real kind of level zero point here. Who is Oprah?
If anybody needs to ask this question, they cannot be our friend, Hannah. There are people out there who've never heard of Oprah. Who is Oprah? She is so many women in one. I would say now she is the most powerful woman in the world. Yeah, let's say that.
Yeah.
She's the most powerful woman in the world. She's certainly the most wealthy woman in the US. She was, I think, the first black woman to become a billionaire.
Yes, I read that today. I did a little bit of research. She is worth $4 billion.
Wow, that's extraordinary. Yeah. I remember reading one interview with her where she said that she got to the point where when she would go and visit her accountants to do her tax, they would bring a crate of wine because she needed to drink to get over how much money she was having to pay to tax because she was making so much money. And then eventually it got to the stage that they needed tequila.
Wow.
So imagine, like, how much tax you have to pay if
that's
you've
crazy.
Got
crazy. I mean, I need a
crate
of wine when I look at my bank account, but, like, for complete opposite reasons.
Like. Yeah, so here is Oprah, broadcaster, spiritual guru, Uber connector. She's the owner of an extraordinary school for young women in South Africa. And I think it's not unfair to argue that she's a political figure, whether she likes it or not, or whether she stands for president or not. You know, her vote of confidence in endorsing a candidate, that is always going to make a difference to a presidential run. And she was really hugely instrumental in Barack Obama's career.
Yeah, I read about that today, and that's called the Oprah Winfrey effect or something, sort of pseudo-serious.
Yeah, and
like that,
the Oprah Winfrey effect is, it's influenced so many things, right down to all kinds of products that she's endorsed over the years. And let's not forget her sponsorship of Weight Watchers.
Yes.
She's a shareholder in Weight Watchers, which has been quite controversial in the last few years because people are saying... Now, it's so interesting about Oprah because originally she was this real role model for dieting. And now, 20 years on from her doing that, that's become... really it's not in the zeitgeist anymore.
Yeah,
the zeitgeist
no,
is all fat shaming, yeah. And it's really interesting. So her Weight Watchers thing is kind of fascinating because she's trying to keep on with that but still turn it around a little bit so that it's in tune with different attitudes that people have now.
Yeah. And what's her history? Where does she kind of come from?
So yeah, she had a very difficult upbringing in Mississippi, a lot of turbulence, a lot of unpredictability, sexual abuse at the age of 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
She got from a relative, I think. She got pregnant at the age of 14 and lost the baby. And she always says, you know, that's the moment when I could have become a mother and it wasn't to be. So she has been married to Stedman. We love Stedman. Stedman,
okay.
For many years. But she grew up in a, you know, really ordinary, poor environment and always wanted something better for herself. And I think she went to study media studies or something like that. So she knew that she wanted to be on television. And very quickly in her early 20s, landed a job as a reporter on a breakfast television station and then became a breakfast TV host.
Yeah.
And then by her early 30s, was hosting her own talk show. And her talk show was getting bigger ratings than anyone else who was doing similar kinds of talk shows, which was surprising because it was thought that, you know, a woman and especially a black woman wouldn't be able to get those kind of ratings, and she was just beating everyone else. And then she did that for a good sort of 25 years, the Oprah Winfrey Show, and then set up Oprah Winfrey Network about 10 years ago, which is her own television network.
She also has a magazine.
O Magazine. That's been going for 18 years. That is an extraordinary phenomenon. It's every month for 18 years, the same person on the cover every month. Can you guess who it is, Hannah?
It's Oprah.
It is Oprah.
Wow.
And sometimes there are other people on the cover, but Oprah has to still be on there. So it could be Oprah and Ellen DeGeneres. It could be Oprah and Michelle Obama. It could be Oprah and a lion, as it was once for the bravery issue.
I saw that. That's very impressive. We'll have to put a picture up on Twitter or Instagram of Oprah and the Lion.
But that sells around 2 million copies a month still in
the
US.
That's loads, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. It's right up there with Vogue.
And when are you going to be on the cover of Oprah Magazine?
When am I going to grace the cover of Oprah Magazine? In my dreams, Hannah, every night. I'm next to the lion.
I was going to ask because, you know, we've talked a bit about the different mediums that she works in, and they're all pretty different. And so what is kind of the unifying factor? What is it that makes her work in each of these mediums?
Brilliant question. I'm trying to think how Oprah would answer this question. I think she is asked this a lot. I don't know if it would still be online, but Jenny Murray on Women's Hour once did an amazing interview with Oprah. I'm pretty sure that's what one of the questions that she asked her. And Oprah's answer is that she has always felt very connected to the things that we all have in common. So she's interested in not necessarily individual stories, but individual stories that represent a bigger truth about humanity or about daily life or about the fact that we're all going to face mortality, all of those things. She's brilliant at bringing those out. So whilst clearly, you know, she must have an ego in order to be able to put herself in the cover of O Magazine every month, she has very little ego at the same time. So she's always looking for the things that resonate with other people, and she's always looking to make connections with other people. And I think people just see her and they naturally trust her to do that.
Yeah. And how did you personally, how did you first discover her, and kind of what has she meant to you?
I think I must have first discovered her on TV in the UK. So I guess she would have been on afternoons sometimes back in the days when we had two television stations. The old people like me remember this time. So it would have been shown on repeats, and I must have watched it when I was, I don't know, maybe like 12, 13. And then when I was in my early to mid-20s, I started reading the magazine as soon as it launched. And that magazine was actually instrumental in me leaving a really important, to me, job. And it was full of all this stuff about live your best life,
yeah.
Be who you really are, don't lie to yourself about what you really want, go for it. And those messages were not very common. This was in the sort of mid-90s, late-90s.
Yeah, because it almost seems like that's everywhere now. But
yeah, back then it was quite a big deal, and it was... It was also frowned upon because it was seen as being really silly and really American and really woo-woo, which a lot of it can be, and a lot of it is platitudes and cliches.
Okay.
But I really felt this O magazine was offering a bit more than that.
So she had a direct impact on your life?
Yeah, she did. And it's also meant that I can't miss a single issue of O magazine because I feel as if it's directing my life and I might get something wrong if I don't read it.
That's
true. To follow the directives of O magazine.
And what's kind of her main message? Because she is predominantly kind of self-help and believe in yourself and follow your own path. Is that kind of what you would sum her up with?
Her big thing is we all come from the source and we will return to the source.
Oh, okay.
And what she is trying to say there, or what I took from it, was that we come from nothing and we'll go to nothing. And whatever happens, you've got to make the best of what's going on and stop messing around. And nobody's better than anybody else and nobody's worse than anybody else because we all came from the same place and we're all going back to the same place. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I like that.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I like that.
I feel like we should address the rumours. There's a lot of rumours around Oprah's relationship with her close friend Gail King. What is that about?
Yes.
What's your take on that?
Well, this is interesting. And I do address this in Vivalicious, my Edinburgh show. And I need to look up about the legal ramifications of discussing this. but I think it's fair to say that there is a conspiracy theory for which I would argue there's no evidence. So we can state that there's a conspiracy theory that Oprah and her best friend Gail, who is a major part of her business, she's also a brilliant television presenter, she's a columnist in O magazine, and she is Oprah's best friend going back years ago from Breakfast Television where they worked together.
Right.
So she's like the friend that you've had for 40 years is Gail. She's amazing. But, you know, it's kind of calmed down now, this whole rumour mill, I would say. But I think about 10 years ago, there was a real thing of people saying, oh, yeah, Gail and Oprah, they're actually in a relationship and they can't come out about their relationship because they've left it too long. And now it would look like they've been lying to us all this time.
Yeah, OK, but Barry Manilow did it and everyone was just like, great, go Barry.
Yeah, well, the thing is, let's point out, you know, legally as well, like we don't know this. Yeah. And also Oprah's married to Stedman.
Yes, yes.
And she's
yeah.
very private in her relationship with Stedman because he's not interested in being in the limelight. But yeah, this conspiracy theory has existed for a while. I think if it were true, it's going to be incredibly weird when it eventually comes out.
Yeah.
And it will contradict her entire brand and everything that she's fought for. For five decades.
Yeah, because her whole thing is about being honest with yourself.
Yeah. But equally, I think she's almost making a point to say, so what? Like, I wouldn't care if I was gay. You know, do you know what I mean? She doesn't want to refute it too strongly because it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
it's a bit like there's nothing she can say that's the right thing. So...
And what do you see as the future for her? Is there a presidency on the cards?
I hope so. I'm really torn about this because, I say I hope so. A, it's none of my business because I'm a British citizen and I can't vote in America, yes, but we all love to speculate about these things.
We all love to have
an opinion.
Yeah, it's okay.
And pretend that, you know, it makes a difference to us. And B, I actually think celebrity presidents are a terrible idea.
Yes.
And we've seen what they can do and we've had quite enough of it. However, if you must have a celebrity president, Oprah would be extraordinary. whether there's any evidence that she's going to run or not, it's been going really back and forth over the last 6 months. And I noticed that in the interview with Vogue, British Vogue, that she did this month, it wasn't even raised as a question.
Oh, interesting. Which is really interesting. Or maybe her people were like, you can interview Oprah, but you can't ask her if she'll be running for president.
Well, exactly. Or maybe she already feels it's been shut down sufficiently.
Yeah.
The latest thing that she said is that she would only run for president if she received a sign from God.
Okay.
And to me, that's a yes.
Maybe we can make that sign happen.
I know. Let's start sort of stamping really hard on the earth all at the same time to cause a disturbance in the force.
Yeah, definitely. And so your Edinburgh show, as you've said, is all based on Oprah. Where can people find it and find you
people
and see it?
People can find my show at Underbelly Bristow Square Med Quad at 4:10 p.m. from the 1st to the 26th of August with the 13th off. And yeah, I'll be doing it. Yeah, every day.
Thank you so much for educating us at the School for Dumb Women, Viv.
Thank you so much for having me. You has been schooled.
So yeah, it was really good to learn more about Oprah. And actually, if you want to hear more about her, you can listen to the bonus episode, which will be coming out this Saturday.
I surely will be.
Harpo is Oprah backwards.
And we're back at the studio. We're nearing the end of the episode, which means it's time for a smart lesson. Each week in the smart lesson, we try to bring ourselves a little closer to the feminist nirvana of being smart women who can code and own their own companies. And most importantly, never say anything that's not feminist and never get anything wrong.
I've never been wrong in my life.
As we've probably all noticed, gendered language has been a hot topic recently. And clearly, lads, it's just not okay anymore.
Totally. We just need to grow a pair and stop using it, okay?
Exactly.
Look, men, I think we really need to know which our manly minds need to be made up because I am sweating my testes off
right over here. I feel like you're shafting me.
Prostate.
So this week our smart lesson is on how to use gender neutral language. And I actually, you know, the smart lesson kind of is a bit of a joke, but I actually really agree that language is all centered around men and maleness and penises. And I think it's stupid and it's not helping feminism.
My thing is like, I do get what you're saying. I just don't see myself relinquishing "hey guys" anytime soon.
Oh no, absolutely! Like I say guys all the time. I say pal. I say lads. You know, I say
lads and guys a lot.
And I don't think that I mean men, but somewhere very far back in the reaches of my brain, it does mean men. Doesn't
actually,
it?
Because
that's where it came from.
Yeah, but
if I'm like emptying the dishwasher, I'll be like, oh, put these lads away.
Yeah, same. I'd be like, he's a great guy about like a bottle of wine.
But why would? Yeah, but the whole point is that if society were more equal, we would have as many words to describe women in that way. Like
the thing is, I also do that though, because I'll often be like, say if I'm doing something in the kitchen and something falls on my foot, I'll be like, oh, she's in a mood.
Oh, really?
yeah.
I'll often just ascribe things genders just all the time, just for fun, because I work from home and I don't have any friends.
Yeah.
No.
But basically, like, I don't think our use of it is going to change that easily because we've been doing it for such a long time. And so we've put some tips together to help us all stop falling prey to the most penis uses of gendered language.
Oh, you've said penis there, Hannah. Can you stop penising around and just get on with the penising show?
Okay, so the first one, when addressing people with like, hey guys, hi lads, bring back peeps and other words that make you sound like a serial killer.
Oh, I think it's like the peeps is the ultimate mum word.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it?
They're peeps. Like, hey, my peeps.
My peeps.
Hey, peeps.
Also,
Samuel peeps.
Hello, friends. Hello,
yes.
Children.
Oh,
people
God.
Do say that, though. People do the hello, friends,
oh, really?
In the semi-ironic kind of way.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. It's always semi-ironic.
Yeah.
You can say pals. That's quite neutral.
Is it?
But what if you're in a situation where, like, say you're in quite senior at work and you want to refer to people to, like, go to the meeting room or whatever? What's the kind of a formal but not weird way?
Hello, everybody.
Everybody.
You're a bunch of scallywags.
From A.
Yeah.
Always take a moment to check just after you said hello and you're going to say the...
Vagina odors.
A group noun. So you have to say, hello. One, two, three. Everybody.
Everybody.
Just to make sure you're not saying something that is not gender neutral.
Yeah.
There's another method as well. You can ease yourself into it by changing a letter in the word that you most commonly use. So if I say lads a lot, I could start saying lids. Hello, lids.
Oh, that's lovely. a very good one.
Yeah, or pals, pals. Yep. I don't know. I don't really know if pals is gender neutral or not.
I like hello, lids. Yeah. Come on, lids.
Guys, just start saying gays. Hello, gays.
Yeah, fine. Can't see that creating any more problems.
I really love the idea of just addressing a group of people as gays.
Come on, you bunch of gays. Okay, another tip. What to say instead of like, oh, he's got balls, or she's got balls, or, oh, you need to grow a pair. Or also, we say if you're a wimp, oh, what a pussy, which is bad.
That does piss me off. Yeah. Very bad.
But what we could do instead is, like, say grow a pair, but be very clear that you're referring to the boobs. So you could say, like, grow a pair of boobs, or grow a pair of tits, or grow a pair of lactating fun melons.
That is still gendered, though, isn't it? It's kind of like, well, do we even it out, or do we just get rid of it entirely?
What about grow a new pair of nipples?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's good.
Quadruple your nipples.
Yeah.
Like, get another finger.
Yeah.
I would be so brave if I had another finger.
I'd love another finger.
That'd be brilliant, yeah. Or you could still say grow a pair, but just refer to other parts of the body. Like, yeah, grow some feet.
Grow a pair of ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big dick energy is another one that's been going around.
Yes.
Which I enjoy.
Because it's not actually about big willies, is it?
No, but it still includes the word dick. It's still kind of originally... I know originally it wasn't about necessarily having a big dick, but it's come so far from that that it kind of is about having a big dick now.
No, it's about acting like you have a big dick. Do you know what I mean?
But it still
it's
implies...
having swagger, isn't it?
It still implies that having a big dick is like the best thing you could possibly have. And I don't have a dick at all.
So well, I've got a massive vagina and I've got swagger.
Oh, yeah.
Big vagina.
You'd need to kind of... to keep your legs far apart so you could walk with it, really.
I mean, it's more a practical thing.
Flaps hanging down, wobbling off your knees.
And then I have to put them in the sack now, ironically, in the testes.
We could go with, like...
wide on energy.
Good. Not gross at all.
No, BDE, big discharge energy.
But that's still gendered, isn't it? I thought actually for big dick energy, it's so harmless, it's so lame, but like new pants energy. You got some new pants on. Oh. It's not obvious, but it makes you feel good.
No matter how you identify, everybody feels good about new underwear.
Yes. Exactly.
And when you change your bed sheets as well.
Oh, yes. New sheets energy. Mm,
new sheets energy.
So you're not going to be like brave and swaggery. You're just going to be like, time for bed. Goodbye.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I've shaved my legs and they're like smoother than silk, I feel like I've got big... silky energy.
Yeah, or just like just masturbated energy.
Oh, dreamy.
And you're kind of lightly buzzed and you're like, yeah, fine, I'm answering the door in my PJs. Do you know who just masturbated? Me.
Yeah. I still can't feel the whole of my legs.
So I think those are some quite good solutions, I think, for the problem of how to stop yourself using gendered language. And I feel almost 100% sure that in future episodes of the podcast I will still be referring to you as guys and lads, and I'm really sorry about that. It's going to take me a little while to change to lids. Well, that's it for another week of Sexy Banality and Testy Chat. If you enjoyed this episode, please do remember to rate and review us on the Apple Podcast Store, send a tweet about us if you like, at Dumb Women Pod, and subscribe so that we can appear without warning every Tuesday.
I do that anyway.
Thanks to Viv Groskop for teaching us all about Oprah. And thanks as always to Harry Harris for our jingles, Gavin Day for our logo, and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space. Until next time, goodbye!
Goodbye!
Like the Von Trapps going to the Swiss Alps. Oh my God, we talked about Switzerland. We didn't even talk about the Von Trapps.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Oh.
No, me neither. Well, I've seen a bit of it. You're more shocked at me than at Alex. Is it because Alex
is I don't know why.
Cultureless swine.
So. Alex is a cultureless swine, that's true.
I am a cultureless swine.
I just expected that you'd be at home on a Sunday afternoon watching TV with your parents while she was like getting fingered.
No, we don't watch that.
Okay. Oh, those were the days.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.